It's time. Time to get inspired and empowered. To realize it's never too late. To create your next amazing story. Get ready to break through, transform, and start living the life of your dreams. So, are you ready? Truly ready to begin your journey to create your next amazing story in life and love? Great. Let's jump in with your host, Life and Love Transformational Coach, Suzanne Oshima.
Welcome, everybody, to the It's Never Too Late show. I'm Suzanne Oshima, and I help single women transform midlife into your best life and find love again in your next chapter. I'm so excited because today we have a very special guest, Michelle St. James, and she's a conversation catcher. And today she's sharing with us why the number 13 is her lucky number and how 13 men asked her in her lifetime to marry them. So welcome, Michelle.
Thank you, Suzanne. It's an absolute privilege to be here and share my story of 13 proposals.
I know. Well, before we jump in, though, I would love for you to share with the audience, what is a conversation catcher and what do you do? Because I know everyone's like, what is that?
Thank you. I have pivoted into a career as a conversation catcher, which involves having a video podcast. So I host Life and Leadership, Conscious Journey. And the topics we cover are around leadership, conscious stewardship, and legacy. So having a dialogue that creates community and tribe, a circle of influence in the wider world.
Oh, I love that because it sounds like you're really trying to empower people and really change the world. I love that.
Thank you. Well, I feel like that we have this privileged position of being able to bring the world into conversation and share the topics that we're passionate about. I appreciate the service that you bring in the world around, you know, your next best chapter. And I have had so many wonderful opportunities to found a social enterprise law firm, you know, a thought leadership practice, mentoring global leaders and encouraging people to lean into a legacy and reinvent themselves as well.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, your job, what you do, has nothing to do with finding love again. And it was really funny just to let the audience know how we came across this topic and why I wanted to interview you, Michelle, is because when you interviewed me for your podcast show, you had mentioned that you had been engaged 13 men asked you to marry them, right? And when you said that, I was like, what? And I was like, you have to tell your story because I know women are going to be dying to know, what is it with Michelle that made 13 men propose to her? Not in ladies. She did not marry 13 men, but I would love for you to share your story of why 13 men asked you to marry them.
Well, I think it's also important to note here that I have a podcast for global leaders. And I had a CFO in Sydney, Australia, DM me and ask me to do an episode on online dating, which led to a whole series of which you were a guest as well on your important topics for women in global leadership and how they can get involved. So thank you for asking. Thank you for your question as well on, you know, why do I think all those men wanted to propose? Well, I think we should reverse that. Why would we wish to be proposed to or be in a relationship with men? I think the value that I can bring to this conversation is I have my priorities up front. Now, I'm sure, and I know, having met a number of women in some of your groups, we are powerful alpha females. We are strong. We are vibrant. We have robust lives and careers. We're successful, financially serene, or doing the tiny house thing and getting rid of everything. And the empty nest just means you've got more rooms that you can add your hobbies and exciting passion projects in. So why am I open to looking for love again? It's because I am successful on every level of my life. But one thing a man does for me, my preferred partner choice, is I can feel feminine. And I was paid a very nice compliment recently by an alpha male. He said, I really love how you can just slide back into being in your femininity. Ladies, secret confession here, a lot of work behind the scenes. I had to get out of my linear thinking, which is very masculine, and move back into my feminine. And that's better for my hormones, for my health and my well-being. So I think it's important that you know why you want to be in relationship, and I value the opportunity to tell you why I'm looking at it, because I have been very successful at the top of the ladder. I'm now podcasting quite happily at my own little place and space, but I'm also interested in being able to lean into my femininity more than I do being in my left brain thinking. I want to stay in creativity, well-being, and flow.
Oh, I love that. You know, it's so important that women really hear what you just said, because you're right, Michelle, is my audience is a lot of strong, independent women who are alpha females. And what a lot of women that are in that role, though, is they forget to leave the masculine energy at the door when they start searching for love again, right?
Absolutely. Would you like me to share the story of my 13 proposals and the wisdom?
Yes, we're dying to hear. Like I know you didn't marry them all, but
No.
we would love to hear about the story, but also what you learned in the process of why you think 13 men proposed to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, first and foremost, one piece of wisdom I want to share with your audience is men are in the business of relationships. Myself as a woman, I was in the emotion of a relationship and feeling valued, and of course, more recently, really, really leaning into my femininity. So I guess I'll kind of do this a little bit chronologically. So, we all had our first boyfriend out of school. I was a late bloomer because I came out of a very dysfunctional, violent household. So I had this attitude that marriage was not for me. I needed my career and my education, and I needed to be able to look after myself so a man would complement my life, not take me hostage. So the first one was, of course, not long after I had gotten out of high school. And I call that one living in the gap because my partner at the time, we were saving to do world travel. And I was born and raised in New Zealand, started traveling after, in my late teens. And sadly, his parents weren't quite sure that he should be with me because I was from a broken home. My parents were divorced. I call that one living in the gap because he went off and he did his world tour and went over to England, and I felt so betrayed and lost. So that one I took the wisdom of much later in life that I didn't need to see what was missing, but realize how I could build up my confidence. So intuitively, what I did was I went off and put myself on a deportment course. And ladies, I'm a curvy girl, but I actually got picked up by a modeling agency. And I went into the career of modeling and stepped out quite quickly because I found that I was very uncomfortable with starving myself, and I'm not a wear makeup, do my hair and all fancy kind of stuff kind of person. But the wisdom I took away was I was in that sort of dissatisfied dreamer mode. I was unconscious of what I didn't know. I was uncomfortable with being left behind. I felt unaccepted by his family. And fortunately, I had the no fear factor going for me. But that left a fear residue of, am I worthy? I got, why did I get left behind? Now, there was a blessing in that because I got rescued by another man who was in a very difficult relationship and was looking to get out of that relationship. But what I discovered was he really needed a mother for his young son, and I was very young, so I was malleable. And I was very blessed to have moved away from that. And then I met who was to become my first husband. And he was an amazing person, very evolved, conscious, and he just loved and adored me. He picked me. I was still in my, this is what I told him. I was not getting married until I traveled the world, started my own business, and was buying my own home. And Oh, he handed it all to me. He had this, he always said to me, if I can't afford you, I don't deserve you. And that wasn't just financial, it was also emotional and mental and spiritual. He really showed up. He was 13 years older than me, but sadly, with just under 10 years, he died suddenly. So I found myself a young mum with three little children, and yeah, that was really tough. So I call that my Zombelina period, because my granddaughter has this fabulous book, children's book about Zombelina. And yeah, and what happened was, I have really learned from this pattern. I had taken myself into a much healthier and happier place, but when my husband died, I reverted back to my norm, and that was alcoholism and choosing men who had addictions, which was what the childhood I had grown up in. So I call that my sort of backward forward period, where I'd taken great leaps forward in a very healthy relationship and a healthy marriage, and then the impact of being widowed really caused a lot of distress, but there was a lot of wisdom and growing that I could do through that pain.
So why do you think that's interesting, that you reverted back to what you knew, right? Why do you think, what do you think triggered you back to moving back into picking men that are alcoholics or have other addiction issues?
Yes, this is a question I really value having the opportunity to answer. I did a genogram later in my life and saw that all the women in my family, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, they had married men who, there was just so much intergenerational trauma from alcoholism that fed right through. And of course, in a more modern age, that drug and other addictions came into play. What I found myself doing was geographical transfers. So here's a knowledge bomb. Edmund Bergler says change of scene has no effect on your unconscious conflicts. And I had to learn that one in spades, and I got my hands well and truly onto that. Yes, so yeah, so I found myself in, well, actually, because I had three little children, my in-laws, very much my mother-in-law and her sister, I think they kind of got together within 2 years of me being widowed. I had been proposed to by five men. Now, when you're widowed and you're a Zombelina, I was missing all this, but my mother-in-law was not. So they set me up with the black sheep. So I ended up in a second marriage, which was full of adventures and misadventures, and I had to again, deal with lots of issues that needed to be on the table. But what I can tell you is, you can go through this stuff, or you can grow through it and then glow. I mean, really be in your best self, because wherever you go, you take yourself as well. So
Can we? We just have to emphasize what you just said, because I know that just went over some people's head. Can you say that you need to grow it? Say that again.
absolutely. We're all going to face pain. A good proponent of our life is pain. So I have this philosophy: you're going to go through pain, whether you want to or not, but you can use it as a choice point to grow through it. And I'm here to promise you, if you do the work, you will then start to glow. Men find that very attractive, because if you've been counting, I'm probably up to proposal seven or eight now, because five of them happened while I was widowed. Now, again, the reason I mention those is because my first husband had been a very popular, successful man. So a lot of men already said, oh, she's a wife I'd like to have. Oh, she has very beautiful children. Oh, she's got this Kiwi accent. She's clearly intelligent. I was out on a limb. It was my mother-in-law who cottoned on and said, oh, well, we don't want the grandchildren going out of the family or overseas, because, I guess I was so vulnerable that they were very aware I'd probably end up with somebody. Do you know what I mean? Because I wasn't, as I said, I really wasn't thinking straight. Yeah, so I've since which learned to allow a good couple of years to get to know someone through all the different seasons and anniversaries, see how they react, how they fit in, and more importantly, ladies, how you react and how you fit in with his family and friends. If it's not a good fit, it's never going to be a good fit.
So, well, and let's also talk about, I mean, you talk about those two important things, but it's also important to remember how he treats you and how he makes you feel, whether you're with him or the times where, you know, there's gaps and you're not with them, like you're spending time running your own separate lives. Is he consistent? Is he there? Does he make you still feel safe and secure? Or does it make you feel like, oh God, I don't know what he's doing? And are we in a relationship or are we not in a relationship? So I want women to really understand that these things are important too.
Absolutely. We need to go on a safari of ourself and our spirit. We really need to be aware and connected to what's happening in here as opposed to, you know, what everyone else thinks out there. Because I can tell your audience, if you are happy and you're content, he knows he has a chance of making you happy. As I said with my first husband, he set the die. He was there. He was on the job to be there for me. Now, I like the other point that you made, and I'm also was trying to make, is if you're not fitting in and he's not going to stand up for you or be your protector, that leaves you very vulnerable. And I had a really deep experience of that, which was very, I turned it on myself. What was I doing wrong? How could I do better? And it was actually nothing to do with me. I was just in the wrong place with somebody who was a wonderful person. But there was not the ability to be caring of me. There was a willingness to enjoy my discomfort and not necessarily fitting in. So my life wasn't being complimented; it was being compromised.
Ooh, and again, good point.
I go back to the family genogram. There were a lot of really good, strong, fabulous women who did amazing things under difficult circumstances in my family genogram. And I'm a good girl. I show up. I can be over-responsible. But if I'm going to be vulnerable where I'm trying to prove something to someone else, that may not be the healthiest place for me to be. Now, I'm sharing my confessions here because, and I'm going to quote a lovely, powerful woman here, Rosalind Russell, flops is a part of life's menu, and I'm never a girl to miss out. Come on. We're going to make mistakes. Let's go and enjoy the making of the mistakes, or at the very least, the wisdom we can gain from those.
I love that. I love that. Things are going to happen. Life isn't perfect. Life is messy. And it's important for us to get comfortable in that uncomfortableness, because I think too often we, as strong, independent women, alpha women, and we're so successful in our careers, is then we try to be perfectionists in our personal life and in relationships. And life is messy. It doesn't work out perfect. And we have to let go of that. I love that you said that.
Absolutely. I have a philosophy: fail fast and fail quietly. And in this case, in these circumstances, share what I've learned from those failures. So I would love to share the funniest proposal I've had.
Yes, we would love to hear.
Well, I won't name names, but I also want to put a caveat that I truly believe people are doing the very best that they can with what they have and at the time that everything happens. And I share this one as a cautionary tale because often we're so excited to be invited to share someone's life and slide that golden ring on that we don't pay enough attention to what life might be like post golden ring on your finger. So this proposal happened in a leap year when an Irish man was visiting where I was, a good friend of mine, and we all got together for a Super Bowl, and I threw the Super Bowl party for a small group of friends, and she brought along her Irish friend who had just been jilted. So us girls have been chatting about that. And I had an engagement ring. And so he came and he was very terribly jilted and very terribly down. And it was leap year. So anyway, I jokingly got down on my knee and proposed to him. And he snatched the ring out of my finger and put it on and was so delighted, was seriously going to plan a wedding. And I warn you, ladies, sometimes men really want to be in relationship. They want to be married so badly. It's not about you. It's about him. So I found myself in the incredibly uncomfortable position of like, this was actually just a prank. maybe single, but not available. And he was actually rather hurt by that. And I tried to make amends. But as much as I could, I kept my side of the street cleaned. But it's the one and only time I have ever proposed. and sometimes rules are meant to be broken, but be careful of vulnerable people. So I would share this. If someone is still talking about their ex 2 or 3 years after they've broken up or 10 years after the marriage was dissolved, he is not ready. And you are not going to have a valuable, creative, encouraging relationship because he's still in the doldrums.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Thank you for sharing that.
The most unsettling I want to share with you was I went to university. I did my first degree was a law degree, and I went in my early 30s. And I was astounded by the number of young men that were hitting on me. And there was one who, during the whole 4 years of my study, was constantly trying to figure out how to get into a relationship with me and was very clear he wanted to get married, but couldn't afford a ring. So that was a bit of a challenge for him. And I was very clear, no. And I'm not sure if anyone with a psychology background can speak to this, but that seems to be a real thing. I mean, society calls it being a cougar and that kind of thing, but there, you know, I really was quite taken back by this behavior. And it happened again when I did my doctorate in my 50s, that young men were very attracted to me. And I found it quite creepy because I have two sons that were around their ages. So I'm like, this is not a cool place for me to be. But I will share some secret sauce here. I was off adventuring. I was doing splunking or black water rafting, which is going into caves and floating in underground rivers. And the other thing I did, this is a fabulous confession, and I encourage you to try it. I did belly dancing at law school, ladies. And let me tell you, belly dancing, it releases all this amazing energy. And believe you me, I have one of the best bellies in the world for belly dancing. There's plenty there. And it releases all this energy. But it gives you this vibrational vibrancy that men cannot resist. So again, that might have been my fault on campus. But let me tell you, if you've got any body issues or whatever you want to call it, go take up belly dancing. They're all women. And if you can just really center on the joy that's released from your midsection and how beautiful your body is when you learn to move it so fluidly and flowingly, and you just feel so happy. So the secret sauce is, you know, go do the adventures you've always wanted to do. And I think it's Julian Cameron who wrote The Artist's Way. She talked about the artist state. That was my introduction to dating myself, going out and having fun. Well, the stories you can tell and the mystery behind your smile is worth it.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I just have to comment on the belly dancing thing because I want women to really understand what you just shared. And while it just seems like something small, like it's belly, I understand why it worked for you. And it's because, number one, I'm sure it took you outside your comfort zone, right? but number two is when we step into our biggest fear, right? And outside our comfort zone, is then we take our power back, right? And then it's like, oh, what was I so worried about? And then you start to like really enjoy it, right? And then you start to go, oh, I feel sexy. And then you start to love your body even more so and embracing your body. And the thing that maybe did you shy away from, now you loved, right?
Tell me a woman who just doesn't start moving when she hears a little bit of good music. I mean, and this Middle Eastern stuff, this Middle Eastern music and just being in the company of women having fun. And it's just worth its weight in gold. Yeah, it's so worth its weight in gold. And much to my horror, another secret confession here, because I was at law school, my belly dancing teacher actually mentioned to a new Turkish restaurant that I was a really good dancer, and maybe I should, it would help me pay my school fees. I was like, no, I don't think they'll ever admit me to the bar if they find out I'm belly dancing.
That's so funny. But see, that's another fear that you step through, because someone else could have told themselves, oh, I can't do that, right? Because of what you were doing, and you didn't let it hold you back. And I love that.
Actually, it gave me a lot of wind beneath my wings, because law school is a very hard run. So I'd like to go on to a second really special man that was in my life. I did the sort of online dating thing, and we met up, and from the moment we met up, he was smitten. And I got to know him, and I took the position, another secret confession. I have spent, as you can tell, I just don't jump in and out of relationships. So, of course, I decided to enjoy myself, give myself a little freedom and expand those boundaries, you know, as a good girl. So we dated and we had so much fun. And I said to him, I did not want to meet his children because he was in the last stages of a divorce. And I was like, I don't really want to meet your children or anything like this. This is just you and I having fun. Well, anyway, we were together for 8 weeks. And the last weekend of that 8 weeks, he unexpectedly had his children. And I think unexpectedly on purpose, and introduced me. And I really struggled with that because I wasn't looking to get into a relationship. I was just really loving the fact that I could enjoy his company, his companionship, but not be somebody's mother, not being trying to take care of the house. I had law exams and things, and I just finished all that. So I was on break. So I thought, well, I can really enjoy this. And, as things happen between couples separating, there was a lot of mischief around when he could see his children. Anyway, he accidentally on purpose introduced me to the children, and I spent that weekend with them. I couldn't quite get myself out of it, so I just kind of went through it. And sadly, he went to work on the Monday morning and was killed in an accident.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm here thinking, I am expanding my boundaries. I'm not looking to get married or be in a, just really enjoy the moment, right? I kind of was at that point. I'd been widowed, I'd been divorced. I really just wanted to enjoy the moment. Well, his sons begged me to stay for the funeral. They just kind of bonded with me over the weekend. I mean, you know, people do the best they can as they dissolve relationships, but the children don't like their parents a whole lot at those stages. So I stayed for the funeral. And this man had written to his whole family. He had told them all about me and that he was going to propose at Christmas time. And he had the ring and he was just so happy. And after all this darkness, he felt this dawning into a new relationship. I knew nothing about this. And so at the funeral, I'm hearing all these stories about how in love he was, how happy he was, how he had been through such a dark time. And the children really adored me, and like in a weekend, all this stuff. And I'm like, gobsmacked at this point. And finding out his parents came up and they'd heard about me, and I was like, oh heavens. I'm not even sure what I would have done. I did not think we were at that stage. I mean, like I said, it had been 8 weeks. That was a real shocker. And I got back from the funeral, and another secret confession. He'd been sending me erotic letters every day since we had met. And I get back from the funeral and there were three sitting in my mailbox. So he was such a good quality man and so much fun. And he's sharing all this as he's starting to try and introduce me to the family, which if he'd been listening, he would have heard this was not the right time for me. But he was very, very, very special. And that really awakened my inner sleeping beauty. It was like, you need to start dreaming awake and you need to start doing what you need to do with your life. And yeah, so I had to really, really work on what Arianna Huffington calls the obnoxious roommates. I had this internal itty bitty shh committee going on, and I had to really work at being the secretary and a lot of gratitude journaling to work my way out of that. But I share that one because we really need to slowly lift those veils of denial and illusions and intergenerational traumas and see our habits and our patterns and consider where the dysfunctions come from and how they turn back up in our lives. So as I shared with you, when I was widowed, I got into a very difficult marriage with a very good person that I had to get back out of again. And I needed to do some work. I had to be very careful after that second death that I was giving myself time to heal. And you can imagine it triggered all sorts of things. Like I'm pretty sure I was quite clear about how involved I wanted to be in his personal life. It's a bit of a shocker when you just want to have some fun and get to know him, and he's already got forever lining up.
So what engagement was that?
That was number 12.
Oh, we're almost at lucky 13.
We are, yes. This is an interesting one, and I share this one because at this point in my life, I was coming very into a very successful career. I was 3 years out of law school. Was only a few years out of law school. I was on track to be a general counsel for a multinational, and I was feeling a lot of pressure because single women in business, particularly if you're in a big organization, for your upward mobility, they're often looking at you like, why are you not married? Why are you not settled down? Who's your husband? It's all that wife ink. That was my number 13. That one was made, and I had to make difficult choices there again, and I had to be very careful of repeating patterns of the past, because again, this is on the back of another death. And that was a time where I really got into 12-step programs to address the intergenerational family trauma, but also to be very careful of the social conditioning, the social challenging, the self-testing, the self-trusting, and the self-authoring. So I share that story because when you're out in the world, single women are not always welcome everywhere, socially and professionally. Men are in the business of relationships. They know they need to get a wife. She needs to be sufficient and suffice. He's not looking for the love of his life necessarily. So if you can fit the bill and he can make you happy, or survive not making you happy. He, you know, men want to be, in a certain sectors need to be married. And yeah, so I'm very mindful now of the self-authoring part of all those things that I just shared. And there's a great song in the movie Frozen called Let It Go, and there's this line that says, we're really pushed to conceal and don't feel. And it's really can be quite difficult when you're in the boardroom or in very men-dominated places, and they're like checking if you've got a ring on. One strategy is to put one of those wedding rings back on when you're in the world of business and men. So yeah, be cautious of the call to conceal and not feel, and the rewriting and rewiring of how you live your life. So I love Jean Houston's call to live your mythic journey and eliminate your best path for the results that you want.
It's so important that women realize that your relationship status does not define you, and it's important for us to take back our power, right? And not let what other people think, whether it's in business, in our jobs, or in our personal life, friends and family, while they mean well, sometimes they can be judgmental, is to the Remember that the only opinion that matters is your own, Right? And that's what's important. Oh, go ahead, Michelle.
Well, I'd share two strategies. I mentioned wear a wedding ring in certain circumstances. At work events, I have two main rules. If I need to and I'm not sure how safe I feel, I'll put a wedding ring on that finger or a ring on that finger. And the second thing is I never drink when I'm out in professional or dating situations. Not for me. I want my real self to shine through. My confidence, be a true reflection of who I am. My insides match my outsides. I don't, if men are in the business of relationships, he needs to know what he's getting and that I won't settle. I will not share my history or my mystery very soon. He needs to earn those rights, and the men who know about my background and my past are the keepers. And if they're not a keeper, I don't share. And ladies, another secret here. If you actually do more listening than talking, they'll tell you, and you need to understand what they say they mean.
Right. That is so true. That is so true. I love everything that you shared. And when we talked the last time when you interviewed me, what would you shared with me that you're getting back out there to find love again in your next chapter. And what would you say? Because I could see how you're truly standing in your power. What I always coach my clients is about A, standing in your power, but to also B, become the chooser. And I see that in you. Like you're mirroring that to me. And what would you say to the woman that says, Michelle, that's all great for you, but I've never been proposed to 13 times, so I don't know if I can find love again in my next chapter. What would you say to her?
Well, I'm going to quote Daniel Saint this time. He says, "She wore her scars as her best attire, a stunning dress made of hellfire. You've earned your place in the world. You have survived childhood. You've survived being a teenager. You've survived adulthood. Go have some fun." And honestly, the most compliments I get are about my smile and my conversation. And really, men are hunters. They know if you're the one for them or not. And, there are reasons to show up as your best self. And more importantly, as I said, if you lean into your best self, then at least you've got really good company with you on the journey. But it also makes you attractive for people who are on that journey looking for someone just like you.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I don't doubt, Michelle, that in another 10 years, you're going to probably write to me and say, Suzanne, I've got proposed to another 10 times, but now I finally found the right one for you. This has been amazing. So, Michelle, how can the ladies find you?
Absolutely. And again, some of this is a cautionary tale. It's not just the proposal, it's what goes beyond that. You've got to live with that. Best way would be on linkedin.com and my name, Michelle St. Jane. That's the girl's name, ST space capital JANE. Love to converse further, so definitely message me or connect. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on the It's Never Too Late show. My show is available both in video and podcast format, which can be found at yournextamazingstory.com.
Love today's episode of the It's Never Too Late show? Then head on over to yournextamazingstory.com to continue the conversation, get access to show notes, and get more amazing content.